Good morning. Welcome. Thank you very much for coming first thing in the morning, bright and early. Welcome to Tips and Tricks for Building Rich Reports in SQL Server 2012 Reporting Services. My name is Ricardo Muti. I'm a senior program manager on the reporting services team at Microsoft headquarters in Redmond. I've been with that team for about 3 years, and I've worked on reporting services quite a bit. So hopefully you will find this session helpful. And also, if you have any questions on reporting services, either about this session or just in general, I'd be happy to help answer them either at the end of the session, after the session, or you can find me at the kiosk, at the BI booth at the kiosk. Now, this is a 300-level session. It is definitely not a introduction to reporting services session. So I am kind of expecting that you are basically familiar with reporting services, that you can go and create a basic report in Report Builder or Report Designer, because this session is really about creating better reports and using some richer data visualizations and some richer techniques to create better reports. Just one other disclaimer would be that we presented a session at last year's Tech Ed with very similar content. So if you've already seen that session, I don't want you to be disappointed if you're expecting a lot of new content. However, if you weren't here last year or you missed that session, or could just use a refresher, then fantastic. Enjoy. I hope you find it really useful. The objective today is that after this session, I want you to be able to create not just any report, but a report that encourages immediate understanding and makes the insights kind of pop off the screen. When you look at your typical mediocre report, you have a bunch of information that it throws on the screen at you, and then you have to go and decide and look for whether there's anything interesting in there, any valuable insight that you should go and follow up on or take action on. When you create a really, really good report, it should do the opposite. You should have any valuable insight kind of leap off the screen and grab the user's attention. So that's the kind of report that I want you to be able to create. The way we're going to do that today is mostly with demos. We're going to spend the vast majority of this session demoing, and there are only a few slides in between. First, we're going to take a look at the tablex control. The tablex control is the most fundamental control in reporting services, and it's really important to have a really deep understanding of how it works and how you can use it. It's really good for organizing the layout of information in your report into kind of a grouped, hierarchical, multi-dimensional structure. So we'll spend a good amount of time looking at how you use the tablex in various ways. And then moving on to just beyond having these grids, these tablex controls, how can you use graphics and richer data visualizations and colors to emphasize the data better so that it, you know, the important stuff leaps off the screen at you? And we'll spend a good amount of time on that part. Then we'll talk a little bit about choosing the right data visualization when you have perhaps multiple alternatives that you might think could do the job. Which one is the better and more effective one? And then I have some miscellaneous tips and tricks that we'll try and squeeze in as many as we can, depending on time. And we have a few of those towards the end. So with that, we will jump right into it. I have a sample data set that we're going to be using for the entire session today. And that data set is data, real data, from the United States Department of Agriculture on the production of lettuce. And I can hear the excitement in the room right now. Finally, I know, right? We've been waiting the whole conference for lettuce data, and it's like, thank God. Why did the original creator of presentation that this is derived from choose lettuce? I can only guess that it is because there's no possible way that anybody in this room has the slightest interest in lettuce, and therefore it really will not detract from the real point of today's presentation. So, starting with, how do we use the tablex control to organize data? What is the tablex anyways? Well, I can maybe defer the complete definition and say, at its most basic, a tablex is basically a table. So here's a table, right? Typical wireframe sort of table. And you've got rows and you've got columns. There are a couple of different types of rows in this table. We've got what you might call a static row. It's just a header. You have static values in the header that are the labels of the fields. And it's not going to be bound to data or repeated or anything like that. In contrast to this next thing, which is a row group, or what you might call a dynamic row member. And that, in the actual report definition, is actually only one row, but it's defined with a group so that it will be repeated for all instances of that group depending on the data that it's bound to. Now, that is not necessarily one-to-one with the level of detail in your data set. It could be, but your data set could also look something like this. You could have multiple rows for each state. So what happens is you can have grouping in your data in your query. You can also have grouping in the report, in the tablex structure. And so multiple rows, one row in your tablex control could be grouping and aggregating multiple rows in your data set. So with that, let's jump right into a demo. Here I am in Report Builder. I'm going to be doing all the demos today in Report Builder, but everything that I'm showing is equally applicable to Report Designer. Also, pretty much everything that I'm showing is equally applicable to the previous version of Reporting Services, 2008 R2. There are some things that I will show that do not go as far back as 2008. So here I am, Report Builder. And I'm going to show you how to create a tablex from scratch. You might know how to create it using the wizard, but we're going to go a little bit more advanced and show you how to do it with just creating it from scratch. So here the data set that I have is on lettuce production. And if I run this query, you'll see what I have here. And I have basically data on the production of lettuce in each state in the United States for the 1960s decade. So I have one row for each state and each year in that decade. And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to insert a table. And I'm going to, again, not use a wizard. I'm just going to insert it from scratch. And we'll create that there. And then we're just going to start dragging in fields. So let's drag in from this data set the state and the amount of production. And then maybe we'll bold that right there. And then we'll run that, see what we have. OK. That might not have been what you, it may or may not have been what you expected, because we didn't get one row for each state. We got one row, we got 10 rows for each state. Now, the reason that is because if we look back here at what we have, you've got this little icon in the tablex that's got three lines there besides state. That is a symbol for a details group. It means we've got a details group. And if we look down here in the row groups, you have a similar icon, and it even says details. So the one group that we have on the rows is details. And what that means is we're going to have one visual row for each row in the data set. And you'll remember that we have 10 rows for each state, one for each decade, one for each year in the decade. So that's not what I want. I want one row for each state. So let's get rid of this column. And instead of dragging state just into the details group, let's drag it in as a new group. So now we have a state group. And if I run this now, well, I am sort of getting one row or at least one cell for each state, but I'm still getting that details group. I'm still getting one child row for each year in the decade. Now, the reason is, if we look here, I added the state group, but I didn't use it to replace the details group. I just added it, and I still have the details group. So also, if you look up here, you'll see that there is this different icon now. You've got the details group icon, but you've also got this bracket icon that means we've got an outer group around that. So also, whenever you see these dashed lines in a tablex control, like you'll see between the first and the second column there, that indicates a boundary between different regions of the tablex control. You've got row groups, column groups, the intersection, which is the body, and then the corner in the top left. So this is the boundary between the row groups and the body, which contains the details. So let us delete the details group. So I'll say delete group. And whenever you try and delete a group, it gives you an option. It says, do you want to delete the group? And if we're talking about a row group, delete the row that it's in as well from the tablex. Or do you just want to delete the grouping and remove that grouping from the data and leave the row and everything else intact? Well, in this case, the row that the details group is in is the same row as the state group is in. So if I say delete the group and the row, the whole row disappears. So that's not what I want in this case. So instead, let me delete this and say delete the group only. And then you'll notice no change to the tablex, only the grouping structure changed. And now, make this just a little bit bigger. I don't need this column. If I run this, now we've got one row for each state, and we've got the production for each state. Except there's a problem with this table. Anybody want to venture a guess what the problem with this table is? It's not aggregated correctly. These are the wrong numbers. This is not the production for Arizona. And this is a very subtle problem that not everybody picks up on. This is the production for Arizona in 1960 only. And the reason is, if I go back to design, this simply references the production field. And it doesn't wrap it in any aggregate function like sum or average or anything like that. And that was fine when we had a details group because it would only be aggregating over one row. So there's no need to aggregate. Here, we have 10 rows in scope here. And if we don't specify some sort of aggregate function, guess what reporting services is going to do? It's just going to take the first value. So we can right-click on this and say summarize by sum. While we're at it, let's format this a little nicer. I'll make it a number and remove the decimal places. Now we run it, and now we've got the correct value. If we want to add another row group here, we can add maybe year and drag that down to row groups. And then what we can do is we can maybe add some subtotals and grand totals. So just within year here, I can right-click and say add total. You can choose above or below or before and after. The default is to put it after, so I'll just click add total, and we'll make that bold. And then let's add a grand total. So I just go into state cell and say add a total here as well. We'll get a grand total. Make that bold as well. And run that. And there you go. You can see we have subtotals. And if I were to go to the last page, you would see somewhere here the grand total. Now, one other thing I just wanted to point out here, these little orange indicators here that you see beside the cell, it's a helpful way to understand what grouping scope you're in. So for example, in this cell, I am grouped, the innermost group that's scoping the level of detail is my state group. Whereas if I go into this cell here, you will see that now the year group is highlighted orange because we're grouped now by state and by year in this cell. So that's an easy way to tell what level of detail, what level of grouping you're in a particular cell in a tablex. So that's a basic tablex control. Switch back here. Let's keep going. So tablex is a table, but what makes a table a tablex is that it can also be a matrix. If you've worked with previous versions of reporting services before 2008, table, matrix, and list were all separate controls. And there were some inconsistencies between them. And if you started with one, you couldn't really convert it to another one. You had to kind of start from scratch. So although they still look like three separate controls in Report Builder, they're just kind of starting templates. And it's all the same control under the covers. If you start with a table and decide you need a matrix, you add column groups, and you've just created a matrix. So here's a basic matrix, which some people may call a crosstab. We've got rows and row groups, just like the table, but we've also got column groups. Here's a column group on year, and it repeats for each year in the data set. But the really powerful thing about a tablex is that it doesn't have to be a pure table or a pure matrix. It can be a hybrid. So here we've got column groups, but as a pure of that, we've got static columns like a table. That was something that was impossible to do before. So let's build one of those. Okay, so just going to delete this table. And now let's create a matrix, again from scratch. Insert matrix. Okay, so we're going to drag in state to rows. Going to drag in year on columns. Whoops. Year on columns. And then the production in the intersection. I can make this bold. Let me format this nicely as a number. And then run that. And there you go. You've got a basic matrix. So that was easy. I claimed that it's pretty easy to convert from a table to a matrix, or at least it's possible to do. So let me prove that to you. I'm just going to back up and get back to where my table was. Let's just convert this into that same matrix. So this year row group here and this year column, I don't want that. I want to put the year on columns now. So I'm going to delete this column. And yes, you could delete the column and the group associated with it. I don't want the row group anymore. And then year, instead of dragging to the rows, I'm going to drag it to the column groups. So now we have a column group on year. Often in a matrix, if you just have one measure in the intersection, you don't label it just by convention. So you'll probably have some title or something that will tell you what the metric is. Like in this case, it says production in the title. So I will just delete this label here. And then state, I can move up this header, I can move up in the same row here, and then delete this extra row. And now the other thing is I don't want these subtotals and grand totals anymore, so I'll just delete those rows. And now we've got a matrix. Let me make this a little bit smaller and run this. And you've got the exact same matrix. Now, let's create one of those hybrid matrices here. So what I can do is I can say for this year column, what I want to do is I want to put a static column beside it. So I can right-click here and say insert column. And now it gives me a couple of different options. First of all, do I want to put it to the left or right, which is easy enough to understand, but also inside group or outside group. Well, it's referring to the group that we're in, which is the year group. Do I want this thing to be grouped by year or not? I don't. I want it to be outside of that group, so outside of the group to the left. And what I'm going to put in here is I'm going to put the amount of lettuce produced, the production. And it automatically does a sum. It's formatted as a number with no decimal places. And we'll run that. And there we go. We've got the production numbers alongside the matrix portion. Let's add some more static columns. So I want to add the amount harvested. I can just drag this in between these two columns. But let's do something more interesting. Not just the amount harvested, but the amount harvested as a percentage of the amount produced. So we'll do percent, and then we'll change this expression. And we'll say the sum of the amount harvested divided by, if I go down to my fields in my data set here, the sum of the amount produced. Okay? That's the expression. One field divided, the sum of one field divided by the sum of the other. I'll click OK. And now, because this is a percentage, it's formatted as a percentage with zero decimal places. Make that a little bit smaller. Run that. And there we go. No, that's no good. Did I miss something there? What was that? Sorry? What's planted versus... No, I don't believe so. This looks like the correct values. I am not sure... Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I added the wrong field. This is supposed to be planted, not production. And this was supposed to be divided by the amount planted. It's the amount harvested as a percentage of the amount planted, not the amount produced. Production is the final product. There we go. So these are usually values between 90 and 100% of what they planted. Now let's add another static column. This time we're going to add production. I jumped ahead. But we're going to do something more interesting here too, which is I don't want the absolute amount produced by each state. I want the percentage of the total amount produced in the entire country. So I want the percentage of total. And here, I'm going to grab this expression and say the amount produced for this state divided by, but in this case, I'm not dividing by a different field. It's production for Arizona divided by production for United States. What's different in the numerator and the denominator is not two different fields. It's two different scopes. One is the row group scope, and the other is the scope of the entire data set for the entire country. So here, for example, I can go down to the data sets area and choose the same field. But this time, it will add an additional parameter, additional argument to the sum function, which overrides the scope. It breaks out of the row group scope and gives it the scope production 1960s, which is the name of my data set. I could have also passed in the name of the tablex. So I'll click OK, format this as a percentage as well, and now run that. And there we go. We've got a percentage of total now. Okay. So that's a basic hybrid tablex table and matrix control. Now we're going to move on and talk about how to create more interesting data visualizations that will better emphasize the data that we're interested in. So here's the table that we just created, the hybrid tablex control. And it's a very typical, plain, wireframe sort of control. We can make it look a little bit nicer, perhaps a little bit more readable, by doing something like this. Gives it a more modern look and feel. The principle here is to eliminate any fluff. And some guidelines for doing that, just use a thin, readable font. Here you have a basic thin sans-serif font. Don't use something with a serif font, for example, is harder to read. Definitely don't use Comic Sans or something like that. Every time somebody uses Comic Sans in a report, somewhere a kitten dies or something. So, I'm not a fan of animal cruelty, so don't do that. You had the wireframe look before. People are realizing it's really not necessary. You can see if you use space effectively, it's very readable. You can dim the label so you can see that the header row is dimmed, because what we want to emphasize is not the names of the fields, but the values. So the Windows 8 design philosophy, one of the tenets, for example, is to emphasize content and not metadata. And finally, if you're going to use a color as an accent color rather than a color that denotes business logic or actual meaning in the data, you're just using it as a stylistic accent color, use it sparingly. Again, because you want to reserve the use of color for things like KPIs and conditional formatting for actual business value. So here I'm just using one accent color, which is a blue, very sparingly. Now, how can we better emphasize the data here so that some of the insights jump out at us better? Well, for example, let's look at the harvested percent, right? I said that they're usually between 90 and 100% or something, but why are we even showing this column? Probably because we care about whether the numbers are good or bad. And maybe, let's say, 95% and above is good. That's our target. 90 to 95% is all right, something we should maybe keep an eye on. And below 90% is a problem that we need to address. A good way to visualize that, rather than just looking at the numbers, would be to use a KPI or an indicator sort of visualization. So here, when you have business rules like that, use something to visualize them like an indicator. My suggestion would be to stay with the basic shapes. There are a ton of shapes built into reporting services and other tools like Excel. And I think the simpler ones look better. The only exception I can say is there's the accessibility issue. And if you have people who are colorblind or partially colorblind who need to look at this, you either need to be careful which colors you choose, or you need to consider using a shape so that it's not only the color that's different. Now, another option here, rather than just using a traffic light, red, amber, green sort of thing, would be that maybe you want a continuous color gradient, a continuous color scale. So you could do that as well with something like this. It's not built into reporting services. Unlike in Excel, there is no real first-class special support for color scales, color gradients. However, because reporting services is quite flexible, you can add custom code, custom expressions. You can do this with custom code. So, and there's a link on this slide to show you a blog post with the custom code that you can use to do this. You will all get the slides later, and you'll have that link. And then you can just use an expression in your report to refer to your custom code and render these different colors. So when you're using color scales, one suggestion would be, perhaps counter to what we might think, it's really effective with a small area. You don't need to spread it over the entire cell necessarily. You can see that this is quite effective and isn't too visually intrusive. Whereas a lot of times what people will do is this. The exception to that, perhaps, though, is if you have a large two-dimensional area and you basically want to create a heat map, you don't want a million squares all over the place. You want these things touching, so you probably do, in that case, want to highlight the entire cell. The other option, of course, is you can actually highlight the text, change the text color itself. Readability is a bit more of an issue there. So the guideline there is when you're doing a fill of a shape or the cell, you can use a lighter fill with darker text. But when you're highlighting the text, this clicker really does not work well. Okay, there we go. Then it needs to be a little bit darker probably, especially if you're on a lighter background, so that it's readable. Because the problem you'll often get is that the contrast is not good enough. So one other thing that we can do, we can improve here, is you have this matrix area with all the different years. And what is the point of that? Probably that we're interested in the trend over time. Maybe we don't need to know these actual individual values. We just want to know, is California producing less now than they were before, or more, or what's the trend over the years? A better way to look at that would be with a sparkline. And then if you really, really want the details, you can still have them there, but maybe perhaps hide them by default. And then one thing you lose if you go with the sparkline, as opposed to all the details, is maybe you lose a sense of the absolute values of production for the different states. You can still bring that back with the subtotal. So here we're showing the average over the years. So whenever you have a trend over time, and that's really the point of what you want to show, consider using a sparkline instead of just the raw data. Again, for the sparkline, use simple colors. In this case, the colors wouldn't have meant anything. So unless it means something, lean towards using simple colors. Here I've used the gray. If you want the details still, you can still include them, but maybe collapse them by default. And then you have an option whether you want to align the axes. By that I mean the vertical axis of the sparkline. The scales are all different for all the different states. That's the way it is by default. It's probably the way you want it. You can do the opposite, but if I were to synchronize the vertical axis here, because the data is so skewed towards Arizona and California, all of the other states would be probably just flat lines at the bottom of the sparkline, which would not be very useful. So just know that you can align the axes, but you often don't want to. And then here, for example, I've included an additional field for the yield. And one way to look at and compare the values of these would be to use a data bar. So the data bar is just a simple one-axis chart. And here I've also used color to format the value as well. It's perhaps a little bit redundant with the length of the bar, but it's arguably effective in this case. Nothing wrong with it. And then in this case, the axis is aligned by default. There's only one axis, and you do want it aligned, because if you didn't, the data bars would all be the same length, and that would be useless. Now we have that percentage of total column. What might we want to do with that? Again, the point is really to see not so much what the individual values are, but who are the big contributors? Who are the states that produce the bulk of the United States lettuce? And here you could use a different type of sparkline that isn't necessarily a line chart at all. It's a pie chart in this case. Now, pie charts are very controversial. People will say they're often misused. Some people will go so far as to say you should never use them at all. They definitely are misused in a lot of cases, and a better choice would be another chart type. But I think here, when you have just the contribution of something towards the whole, you have a couple of slices, I think it's a pretty effective compact visualization. So here we're using a sparkline that's basically a pie. Again, using simple colors. I didn't use anything else unless they meant something. And here, I prefer, and most people prefer, pie charts to start at 12 o'clock. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, in the product, they don't by default. They start at 3 o'clock. You could argue it's more mathematically correct, but it's more incorrect from a data visualization perspective, most people would say. So you can customize it to start at 12 o'clock. It's kind of one of the more buried custom properties in the product. I'll show you how to do it. But it's one of the less discoverable things to do. Now, another totally different way of mixing this up would be the table control that we had. It's really effective if I want to compare the values of one state to another, because I'm comparing the rows and the columns are all lined up. But if that wasn't my goal, if I just wanted to look at the individual states and just kind of glance at get a glance of some of the metrics for each state and not necessarily compare them within a column, I can look at more of a list sort of view or a card sort of view like this. If you've seen PowerView, we have a visualization like this built into PowerView. There isn't anything special built in for this in reporting services, but with a tablex control and a sort of list style layout, you can create this same control in a grid manually. So you can consider a card style layout as well. If you have a picture to include in there, it's really great. So, you know, a picture of the state map or state flag or something in this case. Butterfly align the fields. So what I mean by that is the field labels are right aligned, the field values are left aligned so that they kind of align and touch each other. And then include some space between the charts, between the cards, so that it's more readable. And again, if you're going to use an accent color, stick with one. Don't use too much color, that doesn't mean anything. Okay, so let's switch over to a demo for that. So here I have that same table. The first thing I want to do is I just want to make this report look a little bit nicer. So let's make this bigger. And let's use a nice font. A nice Windows 8 font is Sago UI Lite for headers. I'll make this 36 point. And maybe give this a nice accent color. Whoops. There you go. And then here, a good font for body text, I'll just select this, is Sago UI. And I don't need this to be bold anymore. And I don't want borders on this stuff anymore. I don't want that wireframe look, so I'll turn the borders off. I actually just want one border, and I want that border to be just one thin line under the header row. So I'll grab an accent color here and say just add the border below. Okay? And the last thing I want to do is I just want to dim these labels here. So let me make this text just a dark gray. And now if I run that, that to me looks a lot nicer than the old wireframe look. So now let's start emphasizing some of the data. This harvested percent thing, that was where I wanted an indicator or a KPI. So I'll right-click here and I'll say insert a column to the right. I'll make this column pretty small. And then by clicking in any cell in a Tablex, you'll get this menu and you could say insert. And then you have all these other visualizations that you can choose from. And in my case, I'm going to insert an indicator. Oops. Insert indicator. And I'll grab just the simple controls. And I'm going to remove the border from this, because it likes to insert borders. And now, the value for this thing, if I go and look at the indicator properties, if I go to value and states here, it needs a value to evaluate and then bucket it into one of the buckets to choose an indicator color. The expression for that is the harvested percent, which I already have that expression over here in this text box. I could go and simply copy and paste that expression, but as soon as you start copying and pasting expressions across multiple text boxes or controls in a group, like meaning that you have multiple ones that are referencing the same expression, you probably don't want to copy and paste copies of them because that's a little bit more difficult to maintain. The developer in all of us is thinking, can we have that defined as a variable or something somehow and then just refer to that and maintain it in one place? And the answer is yes, you can. So here's another trick for you. If you take this expression, let's copy it here, and we're going to say we're going to have this as a variable for the state group, and anything in the state group can refer to that variable. So right-click on the state group, go to group properties, go over to variables, and here you can define variables for the group. So add a new variable. I will call it percent harvested. And then in the value, I'll paste that expression. So it's the same expression, harvested divided by planted. I'll click OK. And now, let's go to harvested and change this expression to simply refer to the variable. So instead of this expression being duplicated, I'll just say variables, exclamation point, the name of the variable, percent harvested dot value. Just like that. And then I'll click OK. And let's just make sure we didn't break anything. We'll just run it. Yeah, we're good. We're still getting the percentage value, so the variable is working. Now we can go to the indicator, go to properties, go to values. And here we don't have to retype that expression now. We can just refer to the variable again. So variables, percent harvested.value. And then, what are we going to plot this value against, or how are we going to evaluate these rules? And the default is percentage, which is very deceiving in this case, because these are percentages. But what the percentage means is where the value falls within a range, like as a percentile within all the data, for example. And that's not what we want. The actual value in this case is a percentage, and I just want to base the decision on the actual value. So it's just numeric. And then here, I'm going to say again, between 0 and 0.9 is no good. Between 0.9 and 0.95 is all right. And between 0.95 and 100% is good. Now we can run this, and there's our indicator. Now let me go back here. Now, what if we wanted to do the conditional formatting? We wanted to do the color scale. So I can delete this indicator. And again, there's no built-in control or anything for this. So what I'm going to do to insert that little square is insert a rectangle control. So first of all, the content of this table Excel right now is a text box. I'm going to change it to be a rectangle. And then within that, I'm going to insert a smaller rectangle. So I'll insert a rectangle here. And now I've really got to zoom in to make this smaller. So let me scroll up here. Here's the rectangle I want to get inside there. We'll make this smaller. And then I'm just going to dump this inside of that bigger rectangle. And then it's kind of tough to move it around in here. So what I do is I hold down Control, and then I can move this up to the position I want inside there. So now we zoom out now. And now, if I go over here to the rectangle properties, I want to go to the fill, and I want to set the fill color to an expression. Now is where I need that custom code, because there's no built-in expression for this. Okay, so the way I go to my custom code is I just go anywhere on the background here of the report, I right-click, and I go to Report Properties. And one of the Report Properties dialog tabs is Code, and here I can just paste in my custom VB.NET code. So I have that code ready here. Let me just grab this and copy and paste it into here. Now, this code depends on some stuff in system.drawing in the .NET framework. So there's a helpful comment in my code here that says I need an assembly reference. How do I do an external assembly reference in reporting services? In this same dialog, I go to References, and I paste in this assembly reference. Okay, if you can see that there, it's just a regular .NET assembly reference. So click OK. And now I go to my rectangle, and now I can refer to the custom code. I'll go to the fill color, and it wants an expression for the fill color, and I have that expression over here. So there's the expression. It calls a function called color scale RYG, red, yellow, green, and it just passes in the value and a range into there. Now notice it's copying that expression again, because I created that nice variable. I can go and use that variable again. So variables dot, bang percent harvested dot value. And I'll click OK. And then go and run this. And there you go. There's my conditional formatting and my color scale using custom code. Now, lastly, what if I want to use the actual text color instead of this box? Again, I can go to the text box, go to the properties, and go to the font this time and change the font color to an expression. And I have an expression for that as well. And there's another function that I use, color scale 3 between red, orange, and green, to give me an interpolated color somewhere within there. I could have referred as for the actual value to that variable again. That would have been fine. But just another trick I wanted to show you is that when you're setting an expression for some property of a text box, you can actually, and the value is based on the value of the text box itself, the value of the text displayed within it, you can actually just refer to me.value. If you're a VB.NET programmer, you know me is like this in C++ or C#. It refers to the object itself, in this case, the text box. So me.value gives you that exact same value. I'll click OK. And now if I run this, there you go. Now the text is colored. OK. Now, this year thing with all these years, let's get rid of that and replace it with a sparkline. So I'll right-click here. I'll say Insert Column, again, outside of the group, because we don't want it grouped by year, to the left. We only want one of these columns. Doesn't need to be so big. And then I'll call this trend. And then here, I'll right-click and say insert sparkline. And I can choose a different chart. I'm showing a trend over time, so probably a line or an area chart would be best. I'm going to choose an area chart. Click OK. Don't want any borders on this. And then let's just change the formatting of this here. So my category group is not going to be details. My category group is going to be the year. So this is what's on the category axis, the horizontal axis. And then the thing on the vertical axis that I'm measuring is the amount of production. So I'll choose production. Okay. And then I'm just going to format this series. Go to series properties. And I'll change the fill to be a light gray and the border to be a darker gray. And then we can just run that. And there's my spark line. So now let's hide these years. Before we do that, I'm going to add the subtotal. So let's go insert column to the right this time. And here we'll put in the production. And I'll format this nicely as a number. And let's change the summary function, the summarization function, from sum to average. So again, right-click, summarize by, average. And then here I'll change this caption to average production. Okay. Now, I need a toggle button for my year group here. So I'm going to insert a row above this. And it put another border around here, I think, so I'm just going to get rid of that. And if you're going to look for a control like a toggle button, you will not find it in reporting services. Toggle buttons are basically text boxes. So I'm just going to type in here, and I'll call this show details. And then if I go to this text box, let's merge this so it's a little bit bigger. If I go to this text box, and I right-click on it, and I go to text box properties. It's called text box 46, which is what things tend to get named by default by the designer. I'm going to give it a better name. I'm going to call it show details text box. And you'll see why I'm going to do that. Because now what I'm going to do is let's go to the thing that we want to show or hide. That would be my year group down here, down in the column groups. So I'm going to right-click on that, go to group properties, and go to visibility. It's the visibility of this group, this column group. And instead of showing it by default, let's hide it by default. And then, in addition, say, but its display can be toggled by another report item. Guess how I choose that report item? By name. So I need to look up show details text box. So that's why I gave it a good recognizable name. Okay? And I'll click OK. And now if I run this, I get the trend, and I get the average production. And if I really, really want the gory details, I can go and say, show details. Okay. Now, let's add that yield field as well here. So I'm going to insert the yield in between harvested and percent of total. And we'll show the yield as a number. Or actually, I believe it's a, yes, it's a number. There's the yield. What I want to do is I want to show that as a data bar. And I got the color on here, so let me get rid of the color. So how can I insert a data bar here? I want to insert a data bar below the value. So let me insert a row outside of this group, or inside of this group, rather, below. And then here I'm going to insert a data bar this time. And I'll just choose a regular data bar. And we will bind this to the yield. And then I'm going to make this row really thin because I don't need it to be very big. Just like that. And it looks like I got a border on here again, so let's get rid of that. And we'll run that. Now, it looks OK, except why is the data bar so tall? Why is it so thick? I didn't make it that thick. And unfortunately, this is a bug in reporting services. Just this particular tablet structure happens to reproduce that bug. So I still think it's a really useful sort of look, this, with the value in the data bar below. So I wanted to show you how to work around this. What you can do is you can insert the text box and the data bar both inside the same cell. And this is another useful trick, because the way to insert multiple controls inside of a tablex cell is to make the immediate child of that tablex cell a rectangle. And then you can put whatever you want inside the rectangle. So here what I'm going to do is, let's get rid of this text box, move it outside for now. We'll get rid of this and move it outside. Oops. And then in here, we're going to make this cell a rectangle. Give us a little bit more space. And then we can move this text box back into the rectangle. And the data bar, we'll make that a little bit smaller. Move that back into the rectangle as well. And then we can resize this tablex row. And this other row that we initially created for the data bar, we no longer need, so I can just delete that completely. And now if we run this, now it looks better. So you'll notice that the alignment of the data bar and the text are a little bit off. And normally, you would have a data bar be left to right in a left to right language, and you would have the numbers right aligned so that the decimal places align. But I don't really need the place values to align so much, because the data bar is what I'm going to use to compare values. So maybe it would look nicer if I just took the text box value and left aligned it, unlike usual. If I run that, sure enough, that looks better. It's more readable. Again, the place values don't align, but that's okay, because I'm going to use the data bars more than the numbers to compare the values. Now, the last thing I wanted to show was the Spark pie here for the percentage of total. So I'll insert a column to the right. And let's go in here and insert another Spark line. It's still a Spark line. But instead of choosing a line chart or area chart, I'm going to choose a shape chart, which is a pie, and click OK. And now let's get rid of any borders or anything. If I click on the chart, normally in a pie chart you would have, or any chart, you would have category groups and series groups, right? And the category group would be like the slices of the pie. But I'm not grouping by the values of the field for a pie, for this particular pie. The field here is production. But the two values are not different values of that field or anything. It's all one measure. The values are production for this state and the production for the rest of the United States. So they're just two different static calculations. So the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to delete this category group here. And I have the expression for percentage of total here. Again, I should probably make this a variable at this point, but for the sake of time, this time around, I'm not going to. I'm just going to be lazy and copy and paste it. And here, I'll add two static values that will create slices. One is just the percentage of total for this state. I'll click OK. And then the other slice has to fill out the rest of the pie. So I'll add another one. And it's just going to be 100%, or 1, minus that. It's the remainder. I'll click OK. Now I just want these to look okay, so I'll click on the series properties, change the fill for this first one to be a dark gray, and the border to be a dark gray as well. And then let's go to the second slice. Still want the border to be the same color all the way around the circle, dark gray, but the fill, I will make it no color. And now I'll run that, and now you get the pie. The last problem being that it starts at 3 o'clock, which really bugs me. So let's fix that. I'll click on this. So far, I haven't really needed to use this properties pane, and it's actually hidden by default. But if I go up to view and I check this properties box, I'll get the properties pane. And this is going to be one of the first times I need to use it. And I'm just going to make this bigger. Buried deep in here is a property called custom attributes. See that? Custom attributes. If I click on that, I get a bunch of custom properties for the control, for the chart type. And there's one in particular called pie start angle. Set to 0 by default. Consider 0 to be 3 o'clock, which would make 12 o'clock 270 degrees. Now if I run this, there we go, now they start at 12 o'clock. So that's basically everything that I showed in the slides. So let me switch back. That was emphasizing data. Now we'll move on to choosing the right visual. Along the same lines, this was the basic, boring wireframe control that we had before. Nothing really jumps out at me. I have to go looking for what might be interesting or actionable here. And we ended up with something like this, where a lot more insights just jump out at me. For example, we need to look at the percentage harvested in Florida because that looks like a problem. Also, the yield in Florida is really low. The vast majority of the lettuce in the United States comes from California and Arizona. Connecticut's production has decreased over the years, whereas Hawaii's has increased. All these things just jump out at me a lot more. Now, this may look a little bit busy to some people. It's not necessarily saying that every table needs to be chock full of all these data visualizations. Use them at your discretion, but this is just an example of things that you should consider. So, make your tables pop. Now, here's a quick quiz. Which one of these visualizations is correct? It's showing the amount of production by different types of lettuce. Anyone want to guess which one is correct? Which one? The left one. That is correct, because the bottom group that you have there is a category group. There's no sequential or ordinal relationship between head lettuce and leaf lettuce, and why are you drawing a trend between those? It doesn't make sense. So the right visual here for a categorical axis is a column chart or a bar chart, not a line or area chart. The flip side, you have two things here that show the production by year. You could maybe think of year as a category as well. You're grouping on year. But there's a trend here. There's a sequential chronological relationship here between these years. It makes total sense to draw a line through that trend. So the one on the right is correct. Here, we're showing the production of lettuce over time for different states. And you could do this with a series group with a legend on the left. And you'll see that very often. The thing is, it looks really busy, and it kind of begs the question, what are we really interested in? If we're really interested in the absolute values for the different states, not so much in the trend, then this would not be the best way to look at it. And if we're really interested more in the trend for each state, then they don't need to be all plotted against the same axis. You might want to consider using a spark line like the thing on the right. In this visual, we're interested in looking at correlation between a couple of different metrics. Is there a correlation between yield and between percent harvested? Neither one of these does an absolutely horrible job at this. Like, the right one isn't incorrect or anything. You can see some of the bars are close in height, and therefore they suggest a correlation. But on the flip side, if you want to look at the visual that makes the outliers jump out at you more, it's definitely the scatter chart on the left. The scatter chart really excels at showing correlation. And now we move on to more tricks. So we've got some time. I'm not sure we'll get through all of them, but hopefully we'll get through some of them. One of them is if you just have some data, it's on your clipboard or you got it off the web, you scraped it or something, how can you easily include that in your report? Another one would be how can you integrate data across multiple data sets, do lookups? Shortlist is something that's better shown by example, so I'll show it by example. And then can you tweak your output to Excel and optimize for exporting to Excel? So first of all, clipboard data. Let's say that we had data from a totally different data source that we found on the web or something for the amount of sunshine that different states get. And maybe we want to later look at correlation between that and production or something like that. How can we easily include this in our report without having to go and take this and import into SQL Server or import it into our relational database or whatever? If you've seen the stuff that we've done with Excel and with Power Pivot and Power View, is an easier answer to those next-gen tools because you just paste this in Excel, and then you can use it in Power View, or you can use it in a pivot table. If you're not using one of those Excel models, then you don't have the Excel to just go and paste that into. So you can still do it, though. Here's a more traditional way of doing it. Basically, you need some data source that allows you to include the raw data in the command text itself. So it's not dependent on an external data source. It just has the raw data in the query itself. You could maybe do that with SQL Server. You'll still need a connection to something, and you'll need a SQL query that will actually have the values in the SQL query. But a better option that's not dependent on any external connection would probably be the XML data source. You can paste it right in the XML. And here, how can we get XML from that table? One way is paste that table into Excel and then use Excel formulas to create XML elements. I'll show you some of those formulas, and then you'll get XML that looks like this. And then you can put that right in your query in the report. Okay, so let's do a quick demo of that. Here I have this sunshine data. I got it off the web. This is what it looked like on the HTML page. I basically copied that text. I paste it into Excel, ends up looking like this. And then you can use this data text to columns option in Excel, which is a really cool tool, that will allow you to parse delimited text like this, CSV or a space delimited or whatever, or fixed width text, flat file format basically, into columns. And once I did that, I got this. And then I put this in an Excel table. So now with the Excel table, I can start referring to columns in the table and write formulas. So one formula I'm going to write is I'm going to say refer to table 5, which is the name of this table. And the headers in the table. And give me the header of the state field. And then I need to concatenate this. So I'm going to use the concatenate function. And then I'm going to concatenate this with, basically I'm trying to create an XML attribute pair. State equals, and then the value of the state code. So I'm going to do equals, open quote, and then again another reference into the table, and choose the state column, and then close quote. Whoops. Next one there. I'll just zoom in on that for a second. So you can see concatenate, the header, equals, and then the value. Hopefully I got that right this time. No? What did I do wrong here? I'm not sure what it's complaining about, but anyways. What you end up with something like this, I created it for state, and then for the sunshine percentage, and then I had another calculated column that combined those two attributes into an element. It doesn't matter what the element's called as long as I refer to it properly in the report. And then what I did is I simply take all this, take all these columns, all these elements, and I have a report here. I'm going to close this report. I have a report here for this scenario. If I look in my data set, I've got this extra sunshine data set, which is where I want that to be. It uses the XML data extension. And it's just got some boilerplate XML code in there that allows me to embed the raw XML directly in here. And I'm just going to paste that in there. Whoops, didn't look like it copied correctly. Let's give that one more try. Select all these. Copy. Paste. It does not want to copy and paste. Of all the things to fail in a demo, having the clipboard fail is not one that I expected. Okay. Copy. And paste. Really? Okay. Yeah, that's what it is. Thanks. Okay. Let's give this one more try. Success. All right. Now, just to check that this is working okay, let's open up the Query Designer and just run this. And it's no good. I forgot something. You have to explicitly tell it which attributes and elements you want to include. See up here, if we look in there, it's got this element path, and it's got these open brackets here, and there's nothing in there. So I need to tell it I want to include the state attribute, and I want to include the sunshine percentage attribute. By default, it will import everything as a string. I want it to interpret the sunshine percentage as a decimal, so I can say in parentheses, decimal. That's what that looks like. State, sunshine percentage, and treat the latter as a decimal. Now let me try that. I'll run it. There we go, state and sunshine percentage. I'll click OK. And now we should be able to use these fields. So I'll put state up in here. And I'll put sunshine percentage up in here. Make this a little bit bigger. Let's format it as a nice percentage. And we'll run that. And there you go, state and a percentage of sunshine for that state. Now, related data. Most of our data maybe comes from this one original data set that's coming from SQL Server or what have you. But maybe we have some other data that comes from another data set. Now, if it comes from another SQL Server database or something, maybe we can use linked servers or something to link them together in the query. But otherwise, it could not necessarily be SQL Server. It could be a file. It could be OData. It could be XML. And you can't join those in the query. So the only way to join them would be in the report. If they're in two different data visualizations, like two different tables like I had there side by side, I don't need to join them. It's fine. But if I want to include them, maybe some correlation or some mashup of them in one visualization, I have to join them in the report. And in reporting services, you cannot really join multiple data sets together. However, for some simple scenarios, I can just do a lookup of one to the other for individual values. So here, for example, I have data set one, which shows the state and the year for the state from the original data set. And I want to mash in the sunshine percentage for the same state. So I don't want to do a lookup on state and the other data set and grab the sunshine percentage. The way you can do that is with the lookup function. And the way that works is I take the field from the source data set, which is state. I give it the field in the target data set to match with, which is also state. And then I tell it the field that I want to return from the other data set and the name of the other data set. Okay? So quick demo of that. So here I have this scatter chart. I want to check correlation between sunshine percentage and yield. Does sunshine percentage impact yield? So here I have this data point here. And the y value is linked to the average yield in the original data set. But the x value for sunshine percentage is not bound to anything. And it's going to come from this separate data set. So I will set the expression for this. And then if you look under common functions, you look under miscellaneous, you'll see lookup. I'll put in lookup. Now, according to the definition, I need the field, the two fields that I need to match, which are state. So I need state in the original data set. In the production data set, it is called code for the state code. So code.value. I need to match it with state in the other data set, where it's called state.value. And then the field that I actually want to show is called sunshine percentage.value. And the name of the lookup data set is called sunshine. And I'll click OK. Now let's run that. And there you go. Scatter chart works and it's combining data from two different data sets. I think I've got time for maybe one more trick. Short lists. Like I said, really you need to explain this one by example. But let's say I want to show some data for each region. Here I'm showing the state code for all the states in that region, because maybe not everybody knows exactly what constitutes Midwest or Northeast. But again, I'm not going to be grouping anything by that state code. I want to group it by Midwest. So I really don't need one row for each of these state codes. I would really like something like this that just gives me a short list of the different values that make up that group. So in order to do that, I can use the lookup set function. Unlike the lookup function, which looks up a single value, the lookup set function will give me back an array of values. And then I can use the join function to have a comma-separated list of that array of values. That does not necessarily give you a sorted array, so by definition of the function. So you can have custom code versions that do sorted versions. In my case, the data is naturally sorted, so it'll be OK. So, quick demo of that. Here I have my region and my states. Again, you can see what it's going to render now. It's not what I want. So what I'm going to do is delete the details group here. I don't want a details group. I'll delete the group only. And then here, I'm going to change this expression. And first I need to do the lookup to get the array. of the different states. So I'll go to miscellaneous, and this time I'll choose lookup set. And what's weird here is I'm going to be doing a lookup to myself. There's only one data set. I'm going to do a self lookup. So I'm going to say join the region with itself, with the region. And then what I want back in that array is the state code. And the data set name is called state regions. Okay, so I'm joining region against itself, and what I want back in the array are the states. I'll click OK. Oh, but that'll only get me the array. What I need to do now is wrap that in a join function. The join will take an array as the first argument, and the second argument will be the delimiter that I want to put in between the values, which in my case is comma and space. And now if I run this, there we go. There's my short list of states. So just to wrap it up here, for output to Excel, I'll just go through this quickly, but one thing you should know is if you take a table like this that's got a lot of richer data visualizations in it, and then you export this to Excel, or rather export to what we call a data export to Excel, which is really exporting to CSV and looking at it in Excel, you're going to get something horrible like this, where the fields have weird names, and you have all of this seemingly extra data that you don't really see in your report. The reason is that it's including all of the raw data behind all of the spark lines and data bars and indicators and everything, and you don't necessarily want that. So, some things to know. You can set text box names for your tables. You can set the names of groups and charts. These are good ideas to do because you'll get a nicer output. You can turn off the output so you can from a data renderer, so you can say, go up to the properties and go to data element output and change it from auto to no output. It will be excluded from your output. And then you can add extra hidden columns in your report that you can output to data renderers but that you don't show on the screen. So you can set the visibility to off, for example. And here you'll get something a lot nicer. And then for richer Excel export, if you add sheet names, you can go to the page name property and add a name for your page. And then when you get page breaks in Excel, which become sheet breaks, the page name here will become the name of your worksheet in Excel. And then you can also use this globals.render format property and say only if the format is Excel, I can do something special. So the visibility is different for Excel. And you'll see different things than you see with, for example, exporting to PDF or something. You can do that for any rendering extension. And that is it. That's all the tricks I have for you today. So this is what we went through, organizing data with a Tablex, emphasizing data, choosing the right visual, and a bunch of other tricks that I showed you. I hope that you got the objective out of this, which is you can design reports that make the insights pop off the screen. I really, really highly encourage you to fill out an evaluation. It really does help us. We really do read the comments. And you can scan that code to do your evaluation right now. So we have a few minutes to take some questions. There are some mics up there if you want to use those. Anybody with questions? Okay, it's back on? Okay, my mic wasn't working for a sec. If there are any questions, again, there are mics in the stairwells there. No one? The mics are off. Perfect. This is Reporting Services 2012. But like I said, everything that I showed is doable with 2008 R2. Some of the data visualizations, like I said, are not available if you go as far back as 2008. Like the spark lines and stuff are not available. So, but everything, 2008 R2 and later, you'll be able to do what I showed you today. Yep. So the question was, if you have subreports, can you kind of have a conditional subreport that, depending on a parameter, it will render a different subreport? I actually can't remember offhand if you can set that to an expression. I know you can set different parameters. You can't, right? Yeah, so you can't set this to an expression, no. So the best you can do is either to have one report and then pass in different parameters, or to have both subreports, if you have like a limited number, if it's like one or the other, to render both and conditionally hide one or the other. But you remember, you're still pretty much incurring all the costs of processing both reports. Yep. Any other questions? I'm sorry, I couldn't catch that. Yes. Yep. Yes, it's VB code. So these slides will be published on Channel 9, and then in the slide there's a link to a blog post that has that sample with the VB.net custom code. Yep. Yeah. Can you? Okay.
But I was wondering if there are any standard way that...
Okay. So a question was, can you conditionally enable or disable rendering output formats depending on the report? So like some reports in the dropdown, you would see PDF as an available option. Other ones, you would not. There's no supported way in the product to do that. You can enable or disable the rendering extensions, but that's for the entire report server deployment. So the only other thing that you could do, other than doing hacky things, would be to use that render format.name conditional logic in your report to render different things, maybe more suitable things for different formats. So for example, if your problem is people are exporting this to PDF and it's generating 1,000 pages or something, you can say, well, in the PDF view, we're going to only print a summary, or we're going to only render the first 1,000 rows or something like that. And only when they render to HTML on the screen, we will render up to 1,000,000 rows or something. Right, so is there any plan for us to address the fact that when you, the Visual Studio versions that you're using to design reports are kind of bound to the SQL Server reporting services versions that render them, and you, if you one is ahead of the other or vice versa, then you can get into compatibility issues. We did do something like that when we did 2008 R2, where basically in 2008 R2, in Visual Studio 2010, if you don't use any of the features of 2008 R2, it basically uses RDL 2008, which will still render in reporting services 2008. But as soon as you use a map or something like that, then it uses it starts using the RDL 2010 namespace, which does require reporting services 2008 R2. As for better forward and backward compatibility, it's kind of been on our radar for years. That's really the first thing that we've ever done with it. I can't say there's anything concrete right now that we will provide better forward compatibility. Reporting services has always provided backward compatibility, like the reports will be automatically upgraded, but we've never had forward compatibility that you can take a report authored in a newer version and render it in the older version. So no, there isn't really any increased support in the immediate future for forward compatibility. So to automatically, like for a dashboard, you want it to refresh every minute or something like that? Yeah, there's an auto-refresh property in the report, and you can set that. By default, it's zero or something, indicating that there is no auto-refresh, but you can set that to a number of I don't remember if it's seconds or what is it the unit is, but you can set it to something, and then the page will automatically post back and refresh. For SQL Server, as of the SQL Server 2008 R2, and the Visual Studio Report Viewer 2010 control, we changed it from an iframe to an Ajax control. So we'll post back just within the Ajax control. Yeah. It looks like I'm out of time, so I'll take a few more questions, but I'll take them off stage.